You're listening to NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online at NativeTalk.net. Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@NativeTalk.net. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon. Like biscuits in the oven, sometimes we rise, sometimes we just catch fire and burn to a crisp. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning. Welcome to the NativeTalk.net radio program. You can always visit us on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/NativeTalkRadio if you want to, you know, check us out, send a message, or what comment on a show. Now, I got Brandon here with
hello,
me.
Hello, hello.
And have you ever known what it feels like to be so wrong as you are?
As I am? What?
Talking
this
about how
took a turn.
Okay. I think it was what 2 weeks ago or two shows ago or whatever. We were talking about how on our reservation, the Puyallup Tribal Reservation, the Puyallup Tribal Health Authority, there's a totem pole right outside. We were talking about totem poles, and you went to visit, and you didn't think there was a totem pole, but I was there the very next day. And saw the totem pole, took a picture of said totem pole, and sent it to you to show you how wrong you were.
Now I like how you glazed over a few things there. Do you happen to have that that audio clip from that show? Can we replay what you said?
So you really do you really want to hear what we talked about that day? Because I have it.
Yeah, I want to hear because you want to get all high and mighty about the totem pole. Let's hear exactly
okay.
I will play
that the audio.
Your premise is that I'm wrong. That's the premise to your argument, right?
All right, here's the audio of me and Brandon talking from just a few weeks ago.
The only one I've ever seen in real life was actually transported to a powwow. Someone brought one and put it up.
Dude, they have one at the Puyallup Tribal Health Authority. You're getting on a plane today, aren't you? When you go up there, they have totem poles literally outside the clinic.
Really?
Yes. You are not paying attention very much at all.
So, outside the clinic, where am I wrong? Yeah.
So when I went to the clinic, because I was like, wow, I must have overlooked it, whatever. And I walked to the clinic doors and looked around, and I saw red poles supporting the lattice work. I saw
they
flag
got like
poles.
Flags and stuff out there.
Yeah, I saw all kinds of poles, but I didn't see a totem pole. So I walked away from the clinic.
It's like around the corner.
And I kept walking, and I walked a little further, and I stood at some high ground. I found a high ground, and I stood on the high ground, and I spun around in 360 degrees. Lo and behold, I didn't see a totem pole.
You
so I called
you
Cliff.
Didn't try very hard.
I got to the hill. I went to the highest point and looked around in front of the clinic. I mean, tell me where I'm wrong.
Okay,
that sounded like you said it was right in front of the clinic, right?
The Puyallup Tribal Health Authority is like a large complex. It has many buildings. And we video chatted, and I showed you exactly where it was. It was literally, what was it, 15 steps?
No. It was 19 paces to where you could see. Hold on. No. Not to the totem pole, to where you could see the totem pole. And I'm pretty sure you were taking really big steps.
I took medium-sized steps.
No. You hear that hesitation? This guy took long strides. Why are we arguing about a totem
because
pole
because you said
200
you
yards away from where you said it was?
Because you called me to tell me what a moron I was, that there was no totem pole there, to the point where I actually questioned whether or not my memory was correct or not. And then when I went there, I'm like, there it is, right there.
Which,
what
by
was
the
Brandon
way,
thinking?
You were absolutely wrong. I mean, in the recording, you said that the totem pole was right in front of the clinic. You didn't say it's on the corner of the Tribal Health Authority by the cemetery. You said it's literally in front of the clinic. Well, I was standing in front of the clinic, and I didn't see no totem
pole.
Okay,
you know what?
So I thought I'd call and let
been,
you know.
It had been quite a while, nearly a year, since I had been up there and actually seen it. So, you know, I was pretty dang close. 19 paces. Wow.
No, 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 no. You keep saying it like, no, no, no. It was 19 paces to where your line of sight could see the totem pole two touchdowns away from 19 oh paces God. From the door.
Anyway, Brandon was wrong. I was right.
That's what a fun way to start the show. I feel like this is a really safe place to begin an intriguing conversation.
Well, you know what? When you're wrong, you need to admit it. And yeah, Cliff, realize that
if only all of us who were wrong could just admit it when they said something dumb on the radio.
And if you could just realize that you're a loser in life, you know, wow. You might be able to move on and do something
feels
productive.
So warm and welcome.
All right. What are the most stressed out jobs, would you think?
Being on the air with Cliff.
Oh, yeah, no. Come on, seriously. I don't know, like, what you imagine a stressful job out there to be.
Okay, all right. I imagine like cleaning up after zoo animals would suck.
Okay, that could be like a day laborer, maybe somebody who's like cleaning up things like that. And
more, no, I mean I'm talking like a fecal matter scooper, like a dude that's got to climb in the porta potties after a July 4th weekend. You know what I'm saying? Like that guy, he's probably got a bad day.
Okay, yeah, they don't break down the specific jobs. It's more like categories. Let me start with this. How much sleep do you get a night?
About 6 hours to six and a half.
Okay, so you're on par with a train engineer. They get 6 hours of sleep a night. Do you really only sleep that much?
Yeah, like, and all the time, too. Like, because I have a fitness tracker that tracks my sleep, and so it has a graph of my sleep and everything. When I'm on vacation, when I'm going to work the next day, everything. It's six to six and a half hours. Like, some days I sleep 7 hours, some days I sleep 5 hours, but generally 6 to 6.5 hours on average.
Dude, what do you do with your day? Every time I talk to you, you're sleeping.
You're talking to me right now.
No, when I try to get a hold of you, oh, I'm going to bed at like 7 p.m.
What was the last thing I said? You said every time. What was the last thing I said when you tried to get a hold of me?
That you're sleeping?
No, you're a liar now. You know exactly what I was saying last time you tried to get a hold of me.
You were, I don't remember that.
You even had a follow-up question, you liar.
Anyway, it always seems like you're going to bed.
No. Ha ha ha, your joke's so funny.
Nurses get 6.3 hours. Housewives were hard workers. They only get about 6.5 hours. What?
Dude, housewives, seriously.
Really?
Usually,
they take naps in the middle of the day.
Talk to your wife and see how much sleep she gets a day.
Government workers, ooh, they're stressed out with only 7. Hotels and resort workers, we get 7.5. I get about 9, personally. So
Wow, that's a lot of sleep.
I'm a little bit better than the average. And that's why folks who sleep a few extra hours on Saturday and Sunday should not be considered as being slothful. It's actually healthy. That's because getting too little sleep, which is pretty much an epidemic in today's society, can be a major contributor to type 2 diabetes.
Oh, really?
Brandon, who gets too little sleep,
think I get too little sleep.
Well, researchers from University of Chicago disagree with you. They determined that. Okay. Let me ask you this: do you get any days with like extra sleep?
No, I sleep and see. This is the thing: is that it's very consistent when things are very peaceful in my home. Like I go to sleep with a good routine. Like you know, I do all my nighttime stuff and then go to sleep at a set time, and then I have nothing waking me up in the morning. No alarm clock. No loud noise. Nothing. I can be on vacation. I can be at home at a friend's house.
You get 6
anywhere.
Hours of sleep still.
6 to 6.5 hours, super consistently, almost every time. And I go through like really regular sleep cycles without very many awake times.
Okay. Well, University of Chicago researchers have found in their study that after 4 nights of sleep restriction, basically getting less than 7 hours of sleep, men's insulin sensitivity decreased by 23%. And your diabetes risk increases by 16%. But if you find at least 2 nights of extended sleep, your insulin sensitivity and risk of diabetes returns to normal sleep levels. So if you're not getting any days of extended sleep beyond your 6 hours, According to researchers, you are at a far greater risk of type 2 diabetes.
16% is not far greater. But okay, I'll take that risk.
Then the average, that's pretty bad.
I'll take that risk because I'm making a higher chance of diabetes for myself by eating processed sugars and processed foods and such, way more than my sleep. So I'm just going to let my body do what it's going to do. I never even wake up with an alarm clock and I seem to function fine.
All you have to do is get extra sleep and wipe out the negative metabolic effects caused by not getting enough sleep.
There's an occasional time where I'll have a nap here or there, you know, but it's like it's not regular enough to say it's even once a month, you know. So I can't count that in my extra sleep, but it's like, I don't know, some other times maybe I'll fall asleep while watching a movie late at night 2 hours earlier than I had planned and I catch an extra, well, see, in that time I usually wake up like an extra hour early, you know. So it's like, I don't know, my body sleeps how long it's going to sleep, and I'm just going to, what can I do, lie in bed for another hour waiting?
Well, researchers say you're going to die, and that's probably the reason why you can't spot a totem pole that's almost hitting you right in the face.
Lack of sleep is affecting my eyesight.
All right, let's talk about our weekly series.
Says the guy who literally rode a bike into a pole.
You want to tell that story?
I really want to tell that story?
No.
I feel like I just did.
No. We're
on a topic about lack of sleep and crashing into poles. I think that pretty much sums it up.
I stayed up literally all night that night. Okay, I was a teenager, and we were playing board games and listening to, like, you know, country music, like the wild teenagers we were back in the day.
Our day.
And then we decided, hey, you know what? We've been awake literally all day before, all night. Why not do a 60-mile round-trip bike ride to Folsom Lake?
And this is Clifton and his friend Steven, for all of those that are wondering about the Wii. I was not included in this insanity.
No, you were a child. You were like 7, I think. So we rode our bikes the 30 miles up to Folsom Lake, you know, had a great time. We went swimming. We were riding back, and I was so tired. Like, I literally could not keep my eyes open. This is well over 24 hours. I was going on probably 36 hours of no sleep. And I fell asleep on my bike while I was riding and ran directly into a telephone pole.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. You heard correctly. Clifton fell asleep while riding a bike. He still holds the record as the only guy who has fallen, that I know of, that has fallen asleep while riding a bike. So,
and you want to know how far like the bullying thing has come? My history teacher, I was in seventh grade, so I was probably like 13 years old. My history teacher walked up, took a photo, and did a wanted poster of like a picture of a telephone pole and a picture of me, you know, right next to it, you know, wanted telephone pole for assaulting Cliff Harrell, and posted it up around school and like told the story. And, you know, if I was a more sensitive guy, that could have been pretty traumatic.
Oh, yeah. He would have been fired in today's day and age for sure.
You know what? Suck it up and handle it. I did.
But yeah, I just want to say a little bit of the pot calling the kettle black, Mr. Pole Smasher.
You know what? I'm saying that sleep deprivation is not a good thing. You're trying to defend it, all right? Sleep deprivation will run you into poles, totem or otherwise.
Clifton knows firsthand.
Okay, let's talk about our weekly feature on learning about tribes, you know, the more you know sort of thing. Today we're going to be talking about whales and salmon.
Now I don't get a choice from the list anymore.
No, you lost that privilege.
You revoked my right to choose.
We're also running to the end of the list. I'm gonna have to find some new things about other tribes.
You got to do some more legwork now, huh?
Yeah, I got my list and I'm getting to the end of it. So, now we talked about canoes a while back, a few weeks ago, which was really interesting how big they were. They were like monster sized canoes.
I can't remember what the dimensions you said, but didn't you say like 6 or 9 feet wide?
Yeah, it was like monster sized.
And 60, 70 feet long or something like that, or
huge,
more.
Just huge.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Do you know why they were so large?
I would guess because the trees were so big.
Well, that's one reason. But the other reason...
I mean, right?
The other reason... Well, they didn't have to make them that big, but the
like,
other
they could
reason...
They could have chosen smaller trees, but I mean, once you start mastering your craft and you have a few hundred years to get really good at it, I mean, pretty soon, aren't you going to start looking up at them bigger trees?
Maybe, but they're so unwieldy. And it's like, you know, hey, I'm going to get a bus. Those are pretty big, but I'm going to get a bus that takes up three lanes. You know?
Yeah, I mean, if you got the whole river or ocean to choose from, why not?
Well, just as the Plains Indians depended on horses to help them catch the buffalo, the Pacific Northwestern Indians depended on their cedar canoes to help them catch and kill whales.
Oh.
Whales. Just imagine how big a whale is, and imagine going out there in one of those, like a kayak, you know?
Yeah.
And you're going to try to kill a whale from a kayak?
You're just going to rope it to the side of your kayak and hope you don't sink? I don't know.
Now, whales are big. Like,
yeah, just a little.
And that's why it took them literal days to kill a whale. At any moment, the whale could overturn any one of their canoes, even considering how large they were. You know, like Brandon said, 8 to 9 feet wide. And the whale just knock them over. So nice. They had numbers of canoes, and they used harpoon-type spears. Some natives actually jumped on the whale's back to help
Whoa.
Kill it. Have you ever seen Guardians of the Galaxy Part 2?
I think I have.
You know that the opening scene where they have that giant lizard thing and they're like trying to fight it? That's what I was imagining the Pacific Northwestern Indians trying to kill these whales, you know, jumping on his back. Ah!
I just thought of Free Willy. I don't know.
A successful hunt meant food, rope, blubber to be eaten, made into oil, and containers. The Maka and other Indians from the Pacific Northwest hunted and fished throughout the warm months. In the summers, they fished for salmon, and in the fall is when they fished for whales. You wonder why there are no whales in the Puget Sound today. You know, I can imagine go diving for clams and, oh my God, a whale!
I almost want to see it. I've heard of it happening.
Really? I would be scared. He might be coming back for revenge.
He's going to avenge his ancestors.
That's what I'm talking about. I don't want any part of that. I'm like, it wasn't me.
I think they might even have whale watching tours in the Puget Sound, actually.
Do they really?
I
don't
want to
meet
one. They
have
migrations that happen and all kinds of stuff.
You remember what I was talking about? The like living as the old days and doing like a native camp. Can you imagine the whale watching tours? And then you see like giant canoes out there and like dudes jumping on the whale's back.
Oh my gosh.
In today's
I don't think
world.
That'd be legal anymore. Conservationists might have some issue with that.
We have done it this way for thousands of years, and you're trying to oppress my people. If I want to kill a whale by jumping on its back, who are you to stop me?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in a way, if you die, everyone can just shrug their shoulders and say, you get what you deserve.
He died as he lived.
Like an idiot jumping on the back of a monster.
All right. By the way, if you have any comments on anything we say...
Because I wasn't calling our ancestors idiots, for the record. Like, I hope no one just
no,
thinks
I think
that
you
joke.
Meant, I think you meant me doing it today.
Yeah, it would really not go well. Cliff's not the most athletic sort of fellow. I think the whale would win in that fight.
Probably. But anyway, if you have any comments, you can email them. What was it? podcast@nativetalk.net.
I can't believe you forgot your own email.
I had to find my sheet.
It's like asking a girl her number, and she's like, well, I don't know.
Hey, in today's world, they don't know. They have to go look it up on their own phone.
Yeah, let me call you first. What's your number?
We got to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a moment with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available right here at nativetalk.net.
Practice makes perfect, but nobody's perfect, so why practice? You're listening to nativetalk.net. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Our House Grief Support Center's mission is to provide the community with grief support services, education, resources, and hope.
Our House, with the support of trained volunteer group leaders, helps those grieving find sweetness in the tears. With your help, you too can become a volunteer and help grieving children, teens, and adults embark on the journey to hope and healing. For more information, visit ourhouse-grief.org or call 888-417-1444.
Hey, this is Steve with thepeoplesammo.com. Do you enjoy the outdoor sportsman lifestyle? We've got the high-quality, reliable ammo you need, from home defense rounds to outdoor enjoyment. So check us out at thepeoplesammo.com, where we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all ammo is not created equal. Visit thepeoplesammo.com, where you can stock up on the quality rounds you deserve and shoot with confidence. thepeoplesammo.com.
This is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. We now suck less, slightly. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the NativeTalk.net radio program. The message line, if you want to call in and drop us a line, is 970-278-5791. That, of course, is a message line. So if you call, just leave a message and we'll play you on the air.
Wait, you mean you're not standing by a landline all day long waiting for callers to call your podcast?
No, I'm not. I mean,
can't you hire someone to do that? You've got to be an intern somewhere.
Yeah, I don't have that much money, my friend. You're the rich one.
For now.
What is the difference between honoring an ancestor and using them for personal gain?
So honoring an ancestor would be something like taking their memory and helping it live on by replicating their ceremonies or giving honor to them in whatever way is, you know, important to you. And different cultures have different ways, but like taking advantage of them would be, I don't know, using your ancestors to defend your right to jump on a whale's back, for example.
That might be using them. Good
one.
It
might classify in the other one.
Okay. Here's an example that I was thinking of. So have you ever seen the old television show Cheers?
Oh, yeah. Everyone knows your name.
Yes. I've been watching it lately, and it was interesting. In the first couple of seasons, they had this old guy who was, he was Coach, all right? And he was a well-known director, but he was actually going to retire, but he decided to join this show. And everybody liked him. He was a pretty integral part of the show.
Was his name Craig T. Nelson?
No. This is... No. It was it was some Italian name that I can't pronounce. But he died of a heart attack, like, suddenly. Oh. His health had been declining, and he died of a heart attack. He kept a picture of Geronimo, you know, the old Indian Geronimo, pretty famous fella. He had a portrait of him in his office when he would change into his costumes and stuff. And after he died, they added it as a prominent part of the set to, like, honor him. This is something that he liked, looking at. It was his personal photo, and they put it on the set so that folks could see it on the television. And in the very last episode, when the bartender, Sam, is leaving, he stops to straighten the photo, you know, to kind of draw attention to it and honor this guy that had been a big part of the beginning.
Okay.
So I kind of think about that as honoring, not as so much as like using them, because you don't, maybe you don't really talk about it as much, you know, maybe. But what about a painting? How about a painting?
What do you mean in the sense of like displaying a painting of the person that you're trying to honor?
Yes. So for example, let's say you've got a famous Native chief, Chief Mascoma, who was chief of the Squawkeag Native American tribe long, long ago. I mean, centuries after this guy lived, they have a painting of him. I'll show you the painting. Do you have any problem with that painting?
Well, my first question is, how do they know what he looked like?
They're descriptions. They say it's him. They're just guessing. It's like a painting of Jesus, you know?
What's that stuff on the bottom? Is that like a storybook? What is that?
Yeah, it's like different scenes from.
Okay, like, so this is like one page, and it's so just to describe all of you who, for some reason, aren't looking hard enough at your listening device. It's a Native American man. He's wearing a loincloth. He's got a feather out of the top of his head. He's got his hair pulled in two braids to the left and right, and he's standing on a canoe with a spear in his right hand. And he's angling the spear downward at the water, poised as if to strike it, you know, some kind of fish, I'm guessing.
Perhaps looking for a whale.
Maybe not. Kind of a smaller canoe for that. But yeah, yeah.
And underneath it is, you know, various other scenes. All right. Now, this is a 22-foot long painting by Bernard Chapman.
And that's including all the scenes. So we're looking at that scene I described is looking at one scene in this 22-foot long painting.
Yeah, it's a big, big painting.
That's okay? Amazing.
So yeah. If it's hanging in a business somewhere, and this is an area in which that tribe lived, and this is a revered chief of the area.
You know, this is where it starts to be like, okay, is it honoring or is it stealing? You know, like, is it because
it's in a bank? It's in a bank.
It's in a bank. Yeah, because I'm like, who made it? What did they make it for? Like, if this is somebody who just came into the area and just made a painting that they felt, you know, well, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Well, they named the bank after him. This is Chief Mascoma. OK. And the bank is Mascoma Savings Bank in White River Junction. So the bank is named after him. Does it make sense to have a painting of the guy you named your bank after?
It makes sense, but you're saying, is it an issue? I take issue with who is the bank owner. Is this the tribal bank?
No, this is a privately owned business, not owned by tribal members.
Yeah, and how did they get this painting? Is this a ceremonial painting that this guy was able to finagle because he's got a bunch of money?
No, they had a painter. They commissioned a painter specifically to paint this painting based on available information to the best of his knowledge so that they could hang it in their bank. So they had it made specifically to go there.
I think they have a right to, and I think it... it's kind of like putting the statue of Harmon and Colonel Sanders in front of the first KFC, right?
Okay.
It's akin to that in that you're representing your founders or whatever. So if this guy, let's say he's just some random dude, shows up, reads a book about this Native chiefs and says, wow, I really idolize this guy. I'm going to name a bank after him and I'm going to paint a painting of him. I don't think it's right. I disagree with the choice. But in that scenario, I think he has a legal right to do it, however crass or disrespectful I find it.
Well, back in the 1960s, so for the last 60 years, this has been the bank's logo. Let's see if you can describe this for the folks. That's their bank logo.
It's basically a silhouette of what I described earlier of just the canoe.
Then the guy in it with the spear. You can clearly see the spear, the fellow there with the canoe. So that's the logo. Anytime you do business with this bank, you're seeing the silhouette.
What's tough is that in that silhouette, it almost looked like he's getting speared. It looks like the spear is running him through.
But his arm is up. I think it's clear that he's doing the spearing.
But when you only show the silhouette of the man and you take away the context of the water and the depth of the color, it really does change the image a lot.
Yeah, it does. But so the Squeakheague tribe. They are related to the Elnu Abenaki tribe, okay? Roger Longtoe Sheehan, he's chief of that tribe to which the Squeakheagues are related, as I mentioned. He said he doesn't have any issue with the Chief Mascoma logo. They're changing it, though.
I'm wondering, are they getting pressure to change it? They're getting absolutely no
pressure. They are just choosing to change it. On their own. The change accompanies an across-the-board program to update Mascoma's bank marketing materials that will encompass a completely newly designed abstract logo and a different color scheme. Their aim is to position the bank as a corporation emphasizing Mascoma's, the bank, their social responsibility and commitment to the community. You got a problem with that?
Sounds like someone's trying to tap him on the shoulder and say, hey guys, you're next in line for the whole Redskins and movement of whatever. Cover your butts before you get the pressure.
The bank said it was not changing its logo in response to any specific protest, but it does realize that the images stirred little or no controversy in one era might be viewed in a different light in another era. So they're kind of preemptively changing. So
honestly, with today's political climate, they're probably smart to do so, because I can totally see how that logo can be taken as a racist thing or you know, it doesn't look quite right when you look at it closely.
The bank says when Chief Mascoma was designed back in the 1960s, it was done with absolute and utmost respect for the man who had a huge impact on the heritage of this area, said Samantha Paz, Senior Vice President of Marketing, Sales, and Service. But times change, and we're aware of that. So they decided they're changing. Now, remember I mentioned the chief of the Innu Abenaki tribe. He says, you know what, even though our tribe and myself, we have no problem with it, it might have been a wise decision on the bank's part to regulate it, to relegate the logo to history. Sheehan, who lives in Vermont and makes Native American crafts, says the bank, true to its mission as a steward of people's money, is doing nothing more than lowering its risk profile. It's a pretty smart thing to do, because this way you don't get your chops busted in the future.
Yeah, and it's kind of sad that they have to take away what they saw as a sign of respect and honor, but they honestly, they're probably smart to do so. I'm sorry if you did say so. What happened to the painting?
It's still hanging there. They're not changing the name of the bank. They're not moving the painting, because I don't think that, personally, I don't think either of these things are wrong. I actually agree to an absolute T with that chief. Who says, you know, hey, no issue here, but, you know, it's not a bad idea to change with the times.
It almost seems like people are looking for the next problem. They're hoping to be the one to break the next national sweep of trending tweets. And so, yeah, you might as well get in front of it and try and lower your you know what I'm saying, don't stick out as much.
Mm-hmm.
What they call it, a risk profile? That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, an owner of a consulting firm... for Fortune 500 companies on branding issues and identity says, you might think it's not exploitative, I don't, but it can fuel cultural bias even when it's artfully done. Given all the cultural appropriation issues today, he says, I think changing the logo is a good thing. I don't know if I would change it if I was in charge of the bank, but I can't disagree with their logic. So, you know, being proactive, good thing.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys, that'll do it for us today. We'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net. Phone number 970-278-5791. See you guys next week.
This is the nativetalk.net radio podcast. Listen to us or we'll move into your neighborhood. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.